Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I'm joined, as ever, by my partner from North America, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm good, brother. How are you? Sounds like you guys had an amazing tour.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. The players were great. Steve Smith is equal parts hilarious and terrifying, and I think the fans got a lot out of it, and I think actually the UK generally got a lot out of it, because I'll be very interested to see what Peter King writes in the coming weeks, because I think, Jeff, you know what it's like. I think people, until they come here and actually experience the fans and the level of technical knowledge and expertise from the fans, I think the panel went away kind of blown away by their bottom line was they were blown away by the fans. So that's great for us as a market.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what, Neil, I'm going to pump your tires a little bit right now, because that's exactly the same thing that happens when I listen to you interview somebody, I watch you on television, I work with you on television, right? And sometimes we as the colonists over here in the colonies, we hear that English accent and we think, well, what can he know about football? Like you are an expert on soccer, but what can you know about football? That's how incredibly invalid, if that's even a word, or invalid that whole thing is. And then, like you say, when people get over there and they really see the passion and they hear the questions that are great questions, just as good a questions as you're going to hear in Texas or Florida or New York or wherever, and then they see how much, frankly, how much the fans have to sacrifice to follow their teams.
Right.
I mean, to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, watch games, to spend more money. And it's probably twice as expensive to buy T-shirts and all that other stuff. It blows you away. It blows you away. And I'm really anxious because every time somebody goes over and experiences it, then they come back with glowing stories about it. I've never heard anybody go over and say, boy, that was terrible. I mean, those fans, they don't have any. No way.
No.
Right?
No.
And so now, as higher profile guys come over, and you've got guys again, it sounds like we're doing missionary work, which I guess basically we are, but now Peter King writes a column that people are going to read, right?
Right.
And it doesn't validate, you know, it's not like it changes, you know, the passion that the fans have in the UK for the game. It just validates and confirms,
yeah,
with authority what we've known since freaking, you know, I don't know, when you were playing for the Kent Exiles, you
there
know,
we go.
And first time.
It was
sorry?
Yeah, no, you're right, Jeff, and I think that's why it's great to have over some high-profile people who can go back and be those advocates for us on that side of the pond as well. Credit to all the fans. Every place was sold out. The fans came with passion, with knowledge, and it was a lot of fun. So we'll look forward to the next ones. We'll get you back over for those, Jeff. You know, I missed you this time.
You know what, man? You don't ever have to ask twice.
No, I know.
But let me tell you something. This happened to me when I was away in Mexico last week, right? I'm sitting at the airport in Cancun, and there was a bunch of English kids. They're young guys, probably in their 20s, I would think, that had been over on holiday. And they wanted to talk about the NFL. And here I am in an airport in Cancun, Mexico, with a bunch of guys, with a bunch of Geordies that want to talk about the NFL. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Awesome.
It's phenomenal. That's what's happening. And I think that the world is shrinking, and the reputation of our fan base and the people in the UK is just getting bigger and bigger.
Absolutely. The game goes from strength to strength. And Jeff, I want to sort of move on and talk about this obviously sobering news last week. I actually got this news broken to me while I was on stage by Peter King, that the great Dan Rooney had passed away. This is one of the giants of the NFL game, isn't it? You talk about, I know you coaches talk about, you stand on the shoulders of the men who came before you and all of that kind of stuff. The Rooney family is so entrenched in the growth of the NFL, and Dan Rooney was one of those who was, when you met him, a quiet, sort of unassuming guy, but what a powerful man, and he influenced so many lives in his own life. He died at 84 last week.
Yeah, you know what, it's interesting. I got the message from Troy Polamalu, and you think about the impact that the Rooney family has had, not on the Pittsburgh Steelers per se, but on the National Football League.
Right.
You know, those guys, Neil, it was New York. You and I went to the commissioner's press conference, and I remember meeting Mr. Rooney, stoop-shouldered,
yep.
Short little guy. White. Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
And to me, it was like touching NFL history.
Yeah.
To shake his hand was like touching NFL history. Because here's a guy who sat in meetings with Lombardi, who sat in meetings with Halas, who sat in meetings with Al Davis, who sat, you know, watched the formulation of the league. There's so much of what we lost, so much when we lost that man.
Jeff, I interviewed him a couple of times, and one of the times I was working with the commissioner at the Trafalgar Square fan rally, and the commissioner said, I want to come on stage with Dan Rooney. He's not, it wasn't when the Steelers were playing, but he said he's a big fan of what's happening in the UK, and he wants to come on stage. And he was like, you okay with that? I was like, are you kidding? And I actually introduced him on stage. I actually introduced him as saying, you are now about to meet NFL royalty, because it felt that way. And Jeff, I think he was kind of summed up when and Peter King wrote a fantastic article literally within hours of getting off the stage in Edinburgh, just, you know, documenting Dan Rooney's life and his impact on the NFL. And he talked about how the Steelers frustrated a lot of the other teams around the NFL because they wouldn't raise their ticket prices. And as you know, all the ticket money is shared evenly among the 32 teams. And Dan Rooney told his fellow owners, I don't care what you think. We've got enough money, but I'm caring about the fans and the growth of this game. And I think that kind of summed him up, because we always think, oh, billionaire is going to be cutthroat and ruthless. And, you know, this was a man who still had the interest of the fans at heart.
Two things come to mind as we start to talk, right? And I think of a guy named George Perlis. And George was the D-line coach on those steel curtain defenses in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And his son, Pat, coached for me. And as I got to know George told me stories about what it was like in Pittsburgh in old Riverfront Stadium, their old, bad, nasty offices. And Mr. Rooney Sr. would have kind of his cronies, just Pittsburgh neighborhood guys, always around the office. Because the team, it wasn't his team, it was Pittsburgh's team. Mm. And so those guys were always welcome, and he said it was a sense of, you really had a sense of belonging and community. And then when you and I, as part of ITH, at the Super Bowl, talked to Rocky Blyer, and what did Rocky say, Neil? If it had been any other organization, I probably wouldn't have been given the time to come back.
They gave him months and months on injured reserve because they felt they owed him that opportunity because he was injured in the line of duty. And he said they would have moved on. Many teams would have moved on there. There was quite a lot of emotion when he was telling us that as well. I mean, just they're just small examples, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, again, how blessed are we? And that's such a, you know, trendy term, but seriously, we are truly blessed to have the opportunity to have met that guy, and, you know, and so many more like him that are just icons in our game.
Jeff, one last thing on Dan Rooney, and we hear it every year, the talk about the Rooney Rule, and you know, old teams sometimes try and get around it, or they try and do this, or it's not perfect, or it's not producing enough. at least there is a Rooney rule. And so many coaches have been given an opportunity, haven't they? Because Dan Rooney wanted diversity in his game, and he kind of backed it up with his own head coach for the last few years in Mike Tomlin.
Well, Mike Tomlin's a perfect example of how it works.
Yeah.
Because Mike Tomlin, let's go back to Mike. You want to know Mike Tomlin? Mike Tomlin's a secondary coach for Tony, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And he really doesn't have – there were tons of guys, and with much better resumes, with having done this, been there, head coach here, head coach there. Mike Tomlin had no head coaching experience at any level. Mm. And the Rooney Rule gave him an opportunity to stand in front of ownership and make his case. And you know what? That's what the rule was designed to do. It's not designed to say, okay, well, if this guy's not qualified, he should still get the job. No. It's about an opportunity. Mm. And that opportunity Mike Tomlin has taken, and, again, Super Bowl and how many playoff seasons, and and it's all because of Mr. Rooney's heart and his recognition that something needed to change, and so he did it. He unlike so many of us in life, and I'm counting myself on the bad side here. We all know what the right thing to do. The tough thing is to do the right thing.
To do it right.
Yeah. And that's just the way he lived his life. And that's why it was loved. Did you see Roethlisberger's comments about him? I mean, it's
so warm.
Those are players. Those are players. Guys that, they have all the money. They don't. I mean, but when you hear a quarterback of your team talk about "I love you," right? That's pretty strong stuff.
Yeah.
And you heard it from Troy. You heard it from Roethlisberger. I'm sure. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people that have his life touched.
Yep. Now they're going to dedicate the season to Dan Rooney. The Pittsburgh Steelers will do that in 2017. He was a Hall of Famer. He died last week at the age of 84. Jeff, let's move on and talk about the NFL draft then. Our state of the franchise, we're going to park that for a few weeks as we get into the draft. We've got all 3 days of the NFL draft live on Sky Sports this year, Jeff. That's the good news. The bad news is we're not in Philadelphia, mate. We're not in there. We're not in the mix, but our fans can still enjoy the draft, and we will enjoy talking about it ahead of and after.
Listen, we'll be in the draft. And let's talk about – I'm so glad, Neil, you finally said let's talk about the draft.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to talk about these guys. It's a great class.
Yeah.
This is a great class.
Well, we'll do offense this week and defense next week, but just sneaking ahead to next week. I mean, if you look a lot of the rankings, Jeff, when guys give their big boards and the top 50s, an offensive player doesn't appear until sometimes number 5, number 6. I mean, this is generally a good draft. Miles Garrett has been billed as the top prospect, the defensive end out of Texas A&M. So we won't touch too much on defense this week, but it is a draft that will warm the cockles of a defensive coach's heart like yourself, isn't it?
are you referring to somebody here, Neil?
I'm trying to say this is going to make you happy, Coach.
Give me 7 picks with this bunch of defensive guys. We'll play some defense now.
It is a good one for that, though, isn't it, Jeff? I mean, we'll go through offense in a minute, and maybe some linemen get overdrafted because of the need there. But defensively, is this the strength of this draft?
I don't think it's a question at all about the strength of the draft, Neil. And I think it may be one of the strongest defensive drafts in years. And it doesn't matter what position you're talking about. You're talking about multiple guys at every position, and particularly at the position of what has really become now the greatest need in NFL football. You need edge rushers. There's edge rushers in this draft. You need corners. There's corners in this draft. So that, to me, makes it a special draft.
Let's start then on offense, Jeff. And we won't obviously go through every player, but we'll break it down. We'll look at quarterbacks first, because every year quarterbacks are overdrafted. Quarterbacks are bumped up to round 1 when maybe they should be rounds 2 or 3. And And this group has been hard to separate, whether it's Deshaun Watson from Clemson, Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. You got Deshaun Kaiser from Notre Dame. And the one they say is the perceived best of the bunch, Mitchell, however he wants to be referred to, Trubisky from North Carolina. But then you've got Davis Webb, who's kind of thrown into the mix. And now the last thing I heard on American radio this morning, Jeff, was what, five of them could go in round one, but I'm not sure about that. What do you think?
Well, I agree with your comment that they always get pushed up the draft board. I mean, you just look at their production, and you look at their physical measurements, and you look at all of the things, and, you know, there's not an Andrew Luck in this draft. There's not a Peyton Manning in this draft. There's not a guy that you look at and go, he's the guy, right? I mean, there's your bona fide guy, right? I think there's some good players in this draft at quarterback, but they all have some questions around them, and we can go through them if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
But you know, when you look at them and you say, who's the most NFL ready? Well, here's what's killing the NFL in quarterback development right now is these guys, for the most part now, play in college systems where they have a single read. They're not full field read guys. They throw a million bubble screens. You don't see all of the throws that they're going to have to make from the pocket. They don't take snaps from center. A lot of them are in no huddle offenses where the coach on the sideline, you know, signals them and gets them into the play that they want. So they're not developed like you would want them to be. Right? So you look at Trubisky, and I think Trubisky has a chance to be a good player. I really think he does have a chance to be a good player. But again, you know, now we're talking about a guy with a very, very limited body of work.
Yeah, 13 starts in college, Jeff. Just 13 starts.
So you're basing your evaluation on 13 games that you can find on tape, and then what that kid did for you at, you know, that Senior Bowl, at the combine, at the, and then your personal workout with him.
Yeah.
But still, I'm going to tell you something. I've been around some guys that can, I mean, John Gruden can coach quarterbacks.
Yep.
I mean, John Gruden, you know, Mark Trestman, Marty Morningwig, those are all guys I've been around. I watched them work with quarterbacks, and they're all the best, you know, some of the best in the game. You know, Mariucci, all of them. I'm going to tell you something. When you got them one-on-one and they're in their shorts and there's nobody rushing them and they don't have shoulder pads on and, you know, and a lot of guys can make throws.
Yeah.
But, you know, who can do it? Who can do it in the moment, right? That's the thing. And so you're talking about a guy who's going to get drafted in the first round. I believe he is. And he may be the first quarterback picked, who started 13 college games, not NFL games,
right?
College games.
Jeff,
so that's a risky proposition.
That is. I mean, and let's move on then and go through some of these guys. So Deshaun Watson, he did start 35 games. He went 32-3 in college, and he had 90 touchdown passes. And I guess his two biggest games were against Alabama, and most recently to win the national championship. So where are you with Deshaun Watson? Again, as we look at making that transition?
Well, I think the thing that I think about when I think about Deshaun Watson is winner.
Mm.
And if you watched the fourth quarter of the national championship game, you really saw that. Right? He didn't start the game particularly well, but boy, oh boy, did he play. When his team needed him to make a throw, when his team needed him to make a play, he did that. Here's a guy who won a national championship. Body of work, you got to say, this guy's a winner.
Yeah.
He is a winner. He's a better than average athlete. He's got a better than average arm. Now, again, I'm not a big fan of what they do offensively in terms of preparing him for the next level, but I think he has all of those things, and he will be, again, I truly believe he'll be a first-round guy. He just because the you know, that there aren't enough of them.
Yeah.
And here's one that comes to you with a pedigree of being a winner. And everything I've heard about the kid, Neil, has been off the charts good.
Deshaun Kizer, Jeff, he went 12-11 during his college career at Notre Dame, and recently Brian Kelly said that he should have stayed in. He wasn't ready to come out. That's his college coach saying he should have stayed in school. But he did say that the character was there and that he would learn, and you've got a big upside. But seems like this guy's sliding a little bit. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that kid. I didn't like him when I watched him on tape. Mm-hmm. I watched Notre Dame play, I think, 3 or 4 times. How do you win? Now, it's not all on the quarterback, but you're at Notre Dame and you win 4 games. There's 5 games or whatever they won when it was his football team. Mm. That scares me a little bit. I don't see I just don't see the it factor in the kid. And then again, you talked about what Brian Kelly said. He needed to stay in. The last time I heard a college coach speaking that strongly about how important he thought it was for his quarterback to stay another year. Yeah. Well, how did that movie end?
Pete Carroll and Mark Sanchez, right?
Exactly. Exactly, Neil. Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't.
And so, you know, I mean, who knows him better than Brian Kelly? Mm. Brian Kelly's recruited the kid. He's been with him every day. He's, you know, he's been through the moments with him, all that stuff. Now, we as coaches, I'm going to tell you something, what happens, though. We as coaches start thinking, well, he's a college guy. We can get him, you know, that college coach. We'll get him straightened out. I'm a pro coach.
Right.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, right? You know, my mother was never Mother of the Year, but she knew me better than some lady that won a, you know, magazine contest.
Oh, Jeff, I love the way you just cut through it all and get right to the point. And that's the point, right? He's a coach. You forget all that other stuff. His coach knows him the best. Let's move on to Patrick Mahomes. Let's move on to Mahomes from Texas Tech, who our friend Lee Steinberg is potentially going to have another first-round draft choice. He's got a strong arm. He's athletic. He threw that 78-yard pass in his pro day. He's had 29 starts, Jeff, in 3 years. Is this a first-round quarterback in your mind?
I think he's going to get picked in the first round, particularly because I think he's a kid that's trending up. You know, it's really interesting as we talk about the draft, you know, how it goes as we get into these last weeks. Guys will all of a sudden, it's just like they'll drop off the earth,
yeah,
or they'll all of a sudden get a big push at the end, right? Here's what I think that, and I'm saying this not because he's a friend of ITH or a friend of yours and mine. I'm saying this because it's the facts. Lee Steinberg is the best guy for that kid to have, because here's a guy who's had, I don't know how many first round draft picks. I mean, we talked about the one Super Bowl, he had every quarterback in the game. You know, not just the two starters, had them all. Yeah. Had the backups, everybody. So he knows, and when he talks to the GMs and he talks to the scouts and all those things, he comes with some real credibility. Now, you add on top of it the fact that Mahomes is, you talk about a gifted guy. Mm. Big, can make all the throws. I mean, he made that throw that the throw you're talking about at his pro day, where he threw the ball 78 yards, like there was like a let's do a Hail Mary.
Yep.
He threw it 70. The ball looked like a pea. It was so high up in the sky. I mean, it was an unbelievable. Now that doesn't make him a great quarterback, but what he has is some really, really strong measurables. He's big. He can run. He's tough. He's got a little bit of riverboat gambler in him, which is enticing to some guys and a turn off to other guys. It just comes down to, you know, can you harness him? Brett Favre was the ultimate riverboat gambler.
Do you want one? Well, yeah, Jeff, and there's that it factor. I mean, some of that, like you say, can you harness it? Do you want a wild Mustang or do you want a show pony? I mean, you can have Brett Favre, who makes mistakes and throws interceptions, but he had something about him. And then you get somebody like, I'm going to say it, from last year, Jared Goff, who just didn't have any presence about him. It kind of looked a bit rabbit in the headlights. I mean, you're right. It can turn some people off, but it's, you know, if you're a coach and you feel like, well, at least I can try and mold that.
You know, and again, so much of it comes down to the fit, right? with the, you know, like you look at the fit Tom Brady and what he has in New England with Belichick and that system, and perfect fit for the player. I'll give you a story of that guy you just talked about, Brett Favre, gets drafted in the first round by the Falcons, and it just didn't fit. He and Jerry and Atlanta and all of it was, he was, you know, I mean, there were just, you can read his book. But I can remember Jerry saying to Favre before an exhibition game, Favre said, am I going to get to play today, coach? He goes, Mississippi? Because he called him Mississippi all the time. He goes, Mississippi, unless there's a plane crash, you're never coming off the sideline. then he goes to, the same guy goes to Green Bay, right, where it's a little bit different lifestyle. He gets with a strong guy in Mike Holmgren, and they, I mean, they had their moments, but Holmgren harnessed that wild pony, like you said, right? Yeah. So I think it comes down to fit, and that's why I think with Mahomes has to go to a place where he, you know, he's going to get a really, really strong but understanding quarterback coach. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he can be allowed to do a little bit of the stuff that's always made him special and not put in a box and say you've got to, you know, do it this way.
Jeff, one more quarterback to talk about, and then we'll move on to running backs. Davis Webb was replaced by Mahomes at Texas Tech. He moved on to California and replaced Jared Goff. He's the name that's kind of that late runner coming up on the rails that has now been mentioned as a potential first rounder, or at least somebody with starting potential. What have you seen of Davis Webb?
I think Davis Webb is, again, the same kind of guy as what we saw in Jared Goff. You know, I hate to use this term because I know when we were at Hawaii, they used to talk about Cole Brennan this way. Well, you know, and Timmy Chang, but nobody in the history of college football has thrown for more yards, but they were, quote, system quarterbacks. Well, in the end, I guess the NFL was right because, you know, Timmy played a year and Cole played, I think, two or three, and then they were gone. But that's what this kid reminds me of. Although I will say he does have, you know, he's got some stuff to him. He's got some fiber to him. He's got some of that it that you talk about, right? It's interesting how, I can't pronounce the kid's name, Kanye, or at Miami, who initially was in that conversation with Watson and all the other guys, he's now kind of dropped out of it, right? So it's just that beauty contest that we go through at the end. And some of this, frankly, Neil, is disinformation that teams are putting out there because they want to, you know, lead people. Here's what happens, okay, so the fans can understand. We're getting close to our draft. We're getting close to the NFL draft. Now, there are teams that will put information out there to get you to chase something because we're all, at this point, paranoid that somebody knows something we don't.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when you – and it's all public. So when you bring in a guy to work out, and then immediately well, the personnel department, the head coach, and everybody get together and go, well, you know, why is this kid in there and we didn't bring him in here, right?
Yeah, well.
And so do you understand how it can build?
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
these guys all of a sudden.
Well, Jeff, you had an unnamed AFC coach this past week was apparently down on DeShone Kizer, and you wonder, well, is he really down on DeShone Kizer or does he want him to fall in the draft and be available for his team? We are in the media call the lying season now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Everybody's trying to make sure that they get the best chance at the guy they want, even if that means flat-ass lying.
Yep.
It don't matter.
Hey,
the bottom line is the bottom line, and you got to get, you know, there aren't, especially at quarterback, there aren't a ton of them. And, you know, if you're, say, for example, you're Cleveland. Let's do just a little mock thing. You're Cleveland. And you take Myles Garrett with the first pick. When's your next pick?
You see,
pick
12,
still
right?
First round.
Yeah, they pick 12.
Yeah. So you're sitting there going, if we take Myles Garrett, it's the best pass rusher off the board. And now on 12, we'll get a quarterback. Right?
Mm.
That's what you got to be thinking. Now, what you may want to do is say you like quarterback A. I'm going to say it this way so the people don't get all excited about. You like quarterback A, really, that's your guy. But you spend a lot of time and effort to let everybody in the league know you like quarterback B, so that the other team that needs a quarterback before your 12th pick said, well, maybe we ought to take B because, you know, that Cleveland really likes this B guy, right? That's the intrigue of the draft. That's the fun stuff. That's the part, Neil, that I really hoped that you and I would be able to be at the draft to report, because it's going on all the time during that process.
It certainly is. Let's move on to running backs then, Jeff. And this is a good class for running backs. You've got Dalvin Cook out of Florida State, Leonard Fournette from LSU. There's a bunch of good guys that are coming out in this draft. I just want to start with Fournette, Jeff, because you were interviewing him and chatting to him at the Super Bowl, and you were a few yards away from me. You were a little way away from me, and I thought, Jeff's talking to Justin Houston. That guy is huge. Whoever he's talking to, it looked like Justin Houston from behind, and that was a running back, and I'm like, oh, my goodness.
You know what? In my mind, he's the best one. Right, and I'm going to tell you why I think he's the best one. His body, his size, his physical structure is the best suited for the NFL game. You know, I mean, he's a 240-pound man. Mm. Now, again, this is also a guy who averaged 6.5 yards a carry as a senior. And when he was hurt, he played through an ankle injury the whole year, right? Go back to this when he was healthy, right? When he was a true sophomore, 1,953 yards, 22 touchdowns. And let me tell you something. That happened in the Southeastern Conference. Mm. It wasn't in, you know, some podunk league. This is against Alabama. This is against Auburn. This is against Mississippi State, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, the best of the best. And this guy dominated him. And not just dominated him, made him look bad. I mean, he made other college players look like high school players. So when I saw Leonard at the draft, and I've known Leonard since he was a high school kid, and we had that chance to sit down while we were doing the ITH,
yeah.
In my mind, even at that point, and I think that's the way we introduced him, if I remember correctly, this will be the first running back taken in the draft.
Yeah,
and there were questions at that time, because remember what had happened to him with his bowl game, right? He didn't play
in the bowl game.
He got ripped to shreds, but the truth of the matter came out later that his college coach told him, don't play in the game. You're crazy for playing in this game.
Well, we might see we might see a few more of those in the coming years, players that make those business decisions and choose not to do, you know, we saw Christian McCaffrey, another one, running back out of Stanford, who's refusing to do some of the private workouts for the teams. I mean, that some of these players are willing to stand on their tape that they had in college and not go through the whole dog and pony show.
Well, yeah, I give his college coach credit that, you know, he thought about the kid, right? Because LSU had nothing to gain in the bowl game. They weren't going to win the national championship. They weren't going to be SEC champions. They weren't going to win, right? So all Fournette would have done is put his earning power at risk. Look at the tight end butt from Michigan, right? That got hurt in the bowl game. He was a projected second round pick. Now he's probably slid maybe as low as four because he's got coming off a knee now. So that's the decision that, you know, these guys have to make. And how can you fault them?
Jeff, they always say you can get a running back in any round. It's what they always have said for a number of years. But we saw Todd Gurley taken quite high in 2015. Ezekiel Elliott, you know, again raised that bar in 2016. I guess there's three here that could potentially go in round one, do you think? We've got Fournette, and then you've got Dalvin Cook from Florida State. And as I mentioned, Christian McCaffrey from Stanford is an interesting one, Jeff, because maybe he's not an every down in terms of, you know, you have 25 carries per game. But by the time you look up and the game's done and dusted, he's had 20 touches and a couple are on special teams and some are catching passes out of the backfield. Maybe a kind of Devontae Freeman type for an offense.
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy that fits in the mold of Reggie Bush, Devontae Freeman, as you said, you know, guys that aren't your, quote, put the team on their back, mm-hmm. Adrian Peterson, pound it, Leonard Fournette guys. But they are dynamic football players. And for this kid, when we talk about McCaffrey, you look at a system like New Orleans, where he would, I think, flourish there, because they will use him and put him in situations where he's incredible out of the backfield. He's got receiver type skills. He's very difficult to tackle in space, and he's a great return guy. So he has a lot of added benefit. The question with him is, you know, okay, you start talking about size and durability. Dalvin Cook, I love Dalvin Cook. Tough Florida State guy, you know, he got speed, strong, all that. So each of those backs is a special guy in his own kind of way. It just comes down to what you're looking for. You know, again, if you're Minnesota, for example, and you, who would you take? Well, in my mind, you'd take Fournette right now because he's as close. Yeah, he's as close to the guy you've lost, right? If you're another team, you may say McCaffrey's the guy we want because we're looking for a guy that can be dynamic out of the backfield, gives us opportunity to split him out wide, can help us in the return game, all those things. It just comes down to what you need. You made a great point, though, Neil. How many backs today in the National Football League are getting it 25 times?
Rare. It's rare. I mean, there's a handful, I bet, if that, Jeff. Four or five of them.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't buy into the fact that you can get a running back. I mean, you can get a running back in the seventh round, right? If I go to Kentucky for thoroughbreds, I can get a whole field of jackasses, but there's only a few thoroughbreds, right? So yeah, you can get a guy, but do you want a thoroughbred or you want a jackass?
It's a question you've been asking yourself for years when you've been working with me, Jeff. You know what you're stuck with. let's move on. Any other running backs that you like in that group? Sorry, just to finish up on the backs.
I really think that's the three. You know, we're talking about the top rounds of the draft,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
They're gonna be there'll be 12 of them taken.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
But you look at the guys that you like. There's a guy at Tennessee. There's a kid. You know, there's a kid at Arkansas. They're around, right? But they're not. They're next level guys.
All right, let's move on to wide receivers and tight ends. And I'm going to lump tight ends in with the wide receivers because, Jeff, for a number of years, the tight end has been one of the most important positions in the NFL. In a matchup league, the importance of having a game-breaking tight end has been paramount. But maybe the quality coming out of the college draft has not been that great. But this looks like it's certainly at the top. There's going to be a couple of really intriguing prospects. Maybe we start there with tight end.
Yeah, you know what? When you talk about that position, really, and I thought this was really interesting, I've seen that a number of NFL teams have been working out college basketball players forward of the draft because, you know, again, you look over time, whether it's Jimmy Graham or whomever, Tony Gonzalez, I mean, you go through it. There have been a number of guys that have been college player, basketball players who made the transition to being great tight ends because the physical skill set is rare, right? That power forward in the NBA is the NFL tight end. Now, you look at, I talked about the Butt kid, who I thought was the best tight end in the draft, all things considered, the ability to inline block, the ability to catch the ball, threat down the field, can work the middle of the field, all that stuff. But he's coming off that knee that he hurt in the bowl game.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a guy. O.J. Howard at tight end's another guy you got to talk about, right? But again, he's got a skill set that is what you were just explaining to the listeners.
Yes.
That morphed guy that the tight end has become. You know, you go back in time, and again, just this is why I love this, man. We get to talk NFL history. The tight end in the old days, right? He was really a tackle, right?
Yeah,
and then
a big tackle with
Mike Ditka. Mike Ditka started to change that because, you know, go look at Mike Ditka his rookie year for the Bears. I mean, he changed what the position did. John Mackey, then on and on, Kellen Winslow, and then on and on and on. Well, that position has continued to morph and change, to now where you're getting finesse guys who are 6'5", 6'6", 265 pounds that can run 4.7. You know, there aren't – I mean, the Gronk is a – he's a – they broke the mold in a lot of ways when right. they made that cap. Yeah. But there's still a lot of guys who are wannabes or, you know, Martellus Bennett. I mean, Martellus Bennett declared for the NFL draft as a – or excuse me, the NBA draft as a high school player.
Yeah.
Right? That's how good a basketball player he was.
Jeff, you got O.J. Howard, who you mentioned there. O.J. Howard is kind of that complete tight end again. He can block as well as run. He can create mismatches. But then you've got somebody like David Njoku out of Miami who...
I knew you were going to use that name.
Yeah, I mean,
I
gave it a go.
I knew you were going to say it. I you don't have any problem pronouncing names as long as they're not Samoan names. But but I knew you were going to bring that kid up, right?
Because he's a receiver, really, isn't he?
Hey, yes, he is. And I'm going to tell you something. He is really pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Day, and he is pretty. That's a football term, right? He is what you want one to look like and run like and, you know, be flexible like and catch like and all that other stuff. But then you look at the football tape and you don't get it. You don't see it.
Right?
I mean, you see flashes, but you don't see consistency. And consistency is critical, right? So you look at Howard. The thing I would say about what I give Howard an edge, Neil, Howard could play at Alabama. And he's been coached hard, and he's tough, and he'll block, and he'll do all that stuff. Njoku, it's on the come, but there's a guy that's a great-looking statue, right?
Yeah.
That's a great piece of clay that you got to mold, because he can do a lot of things.
When you look at when you evaluate players, so this is two interesting things you just raised there about Howard. Obviously, comes from Alabama, so you kind of know he's going to get NFL coaching because he comes from. Nick Saban's sort of coaching tree and how he's schooled every day. But then I look at somebody like Njoku as well, and I think, well, Miami has turned out Jeremy Shockey, Greg Olsen, Jimmy Graham, you know, Bubba Franks. I mean, on and on, the tight ends that have come out of Miami. Do you kind of factor those in, or are they just little parts of the puzzle?
They're parts of the puzzle, and they're all factors. I put more stock in the environment that the player was raised in, and I'm talking about his college football program. You know, at Nick Saban's Alabama, that they're going to be tough. They're going to be used to being having a lot demanded of them. That they played in a pro style offense. This kid has done what he's going to be asked to do in the NFL. Miami, more so now with Mark Richt than they were previously, but yet. You know, again, he's got a ways to go. The good thing about, you mentioned all those players at Miami, every single one of those guys was what? A great athlete. Mm. And that's what that kid is. He's a great athlete.
Let's move on to wide receivers. We talked about how we see quarterbacks with inflated numbers. Sometimes we see them with wide receivers and we don't know how they're going to translate to the next level. Just a reminder that Josh Doctson of the Washington Redskins was a first-round draft pick last year, did very little. Laquon Treadwell of the Minnesota Vikings, that search party is still looking for him as he prepares for year number two. So it can be a slow transition. Jeff, I've seen Corey Davis compared to Terrell Owens, which is always dangerous when you start those pro comparisons. You got Mike Williams out of Clemson. John Ross ran that incredible 40-yard dash at the combine. Who do you like in the receivers?
You know what? I think you gotta go when you weigh it all. You gotta go with Williams as the number one guy.
Right.
And here's my justification for that. First of all, you look at his size. He's 6'4", 218 pounds, and everybody wants big receivers, right? Bigger targets. It requires a less accurate quarterback. I can give you all the justifications, right? Now, in addition, the kid has shown some toughness in his career. He had a neck injury his junior year, right? And came back his senior year, and, you know, you look at the year he had. Now, they were national champions. He catches for 1,300 yards, 11 touchdowns, yada, yada, yada. And you put on the tape, and you go, wow. Watch the game. Watch the plays he made, again, in the national championship game, where he just went up and, to use the player's term, he mossed the DB. And those are right. good DBs at Alabama. Yeah. He went up and got the football. So I give him my highest grade as a receiver. And then the concern that I have over Corey Davis, he, again, 6'3", 209, got good speed, all that stuff. But he played
Western Michigan.
Played at a level where he wasn't playing against great corners every day.
Well, this is part of that puzzle as well, Jeff, isn't it? We had this with Carson Wentz last year. It all has to be considered, the level of competition. And you as coaches, you're going to put more weight on somebody who's come out of the SEC and played against the Alabamas and all of those teams that are in that conference.
Yeah, and I think it varies by position, right? Mm. Because when you evaluate this kid and you look at the MAC conference, which is where he plays, mm-hmm. very few people play press man, right? He hasn't had to worry about bump. He hasn't, you know, he's kind of been the big dog in a regional dog show. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he can transition into that game. It's a shock. Let me tell you something. Listeners out there got to understand, it is a freaking shock when you go from college football to pro football. Mm. Everything is faster. Everything is more detailed. There's way more information to process. There's where he would see at Western Michigan, he would see maybe 5 to 7 max coverages a week in a game. He's going to get ready to go to his first NFL game, and they're going to be 30 coverages he's going to have to know.
Mm. And we talked
about what his reaction is.
One of the things we talked about on stage on our tour last week we had a great X's and O's piece with Kurt Warner and Steve Smith Sr. And they said so few times do you line up and you run exactly what you call in the huddle. It's all about reacting. It's all about getting the receiver and the quarterback on the same page. So maybe is that why these young receivers can sometimes struggle?
Yeah, because of the fact that now it's so many moving parts that you never dealt with in college, mm. and especially the way college offenses are today. And again, I use Cole Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders and Aldrick Robinson as perfect examples of what I'm talking about. Not a single one of those guys is a guy physically that you would say, boy, that's the guy I want. But they've all had good NFL careers because they learned in the college system that was – an NFL system, mm. how to adjust routes, how to read coverage, all that stuff. A lot of these kids, Neil, they don't get any of that.
Right.
They don't get any of that. You know, and you look at why a guy like Treadwell, you know, has gotten lost in the woods in Minnesota. It's not like Ole Miss anymore where you're zone read, throw the slant, right? This is a lot of stuff. And, you know, it takes time. You got to be patient with him. I think this kid has all the physical ability to be a good player, but I would still, you know, again, if you ask me to pick one, I'm going to tell you I'll take Mike Williams first based upon what we talked about.
Jeff, tell me about John Ross. He had 208 receiving yards in 2013. He had 371 in 2014. Didn't play in 2015. He tore his ACL. He came back in 2016. Had 1,100 yards and 17 touchdowns. Incredible speed at the NFL Combine. Tell me why he's not just Darius Heyward-Bey.
Well, I can't tell you that. He's not as big as Darius Heyward-Bey, that first of all. But I will tell you this. John, you actually, as soon as you mentioned this kid's name, you know, it's funny because I thought back to when I was just starting out in coaching, and I went to see this kid, a junior college receiver, and he was kind of a street kid. And I said, how fast are you? He's a real quiet, you know, slow, mm-hmm. deliberate, fast. And then he paused for another second. He goes, in fact, very fast. And that's this guy. I mean, this guy can fly. You got a 4.22?
Wow.
4.22. The fastest guy I've ever seen on the field. was Rocket Ismail.
Yep.
And I can remember when Rocket would catch the ball or he would take off and you just go, whoo.
Yeah. Different
I mean, it was like,
right?
Oh my God. He was 4'3", 8". This guy's 4'2".
Wow.
I mean, that's freaky fast. But he's also 5'11 and 188 pounds. Right? Now, he's caught a bunch of balls, 17 touchdowns, 81 pass, all that stuff. He's to me, one of those guys that if you need a guy to tear the top off of it, you better draft him.
So, Ted Ginn.
Right?
You're looking for a Ted Ginn to scare the life out of the
defense. I think, you know what? I think, frankly, if you look at this kid and you compare Ted Ginn as a college player at Ohio State and this kid at Washington, you see a more finished receiver.
Okay.
In Ross than you did in Ted Ginn, and you see more of a natural catcher in Ross than Ted Ginn has fought the ball forever, right?
Oh yeah.
Now he doesn't have Ginn's size and you know his return ability and all that stuff. But what I'm saying to you, Neil, is if you're a team, right, that is looking for, you know, is desperate for a vertical guy that can you know take the top off the coverage, here's your guy. Because there's nobody in the draft that can do it better.
All right, Jeff, let's finish off our look ahead to the offensive side of the ball with the 2017 NFL draft with the offensive linemen. Because you read around and it's not the most glamorous group. It's not the stellar group this year. But again, as we talked about, when you're drafting quarterbacks or you're drafting positions particularly that affect the passing game, then some linemen are going to get overdrafted. I think we saw this year in free agency some linemen get overpaid because there aren't enough good ones to go around. First of all, is this just a so-so group in your mind? And then who are the guys that we should look out for?
Well, I don't think it's a great group. I wouldn't call it so-so.
Okay.
Because there's some guys that you like. But I don't think it's a group with a it's not a star-studded group. You know what I mean? So if you look at them, the guy that I like the best, Neil, is Garrett Bowles from Idaho. Mm-hmm. I mean, Utah, rather.
Yeah.
Okay, and the reason I like it, he's got great feet, he can bend, all that stuff, but he's nasty. I mean, he is nasty. He's one of those guys, like, I remember when we played Wisconsin when I was at Hawaii, and Joe Thomas was their left tackle. And the kid he was going against was, you know, a kid named Makai Kalama Francis that was drafted and played 5 or 6, 7 years in the NFL. And that battle, it was like Joe Thomas had a personal vendetta against Makai Kalama Francis. I mean, he didn't want to block. He wanted to put your nose in the AstroTurf and just grind it to finish, right? That's what I see in this kid. And that, frankly, that nastiness, that toughness is what people really crave right now in the league, right? And so if you're a team that wants that and needs that in a tackle, this kid's got the athletic ability. He's only 297. I think he could use some strength. But, again, I really like him. The other guy?
Jeff, just on Bowles, on Garrett Bowles there. I mean, he was – again, he's going to be quite a story if he makes it right to the top of the NFL draft. You know, he was suspended or kicked out of 5 schools as a teenager. I think that kind of that aggressive nature was part of his life all growing up. I know he got had some issues with his family life. I mean, just generally it's just one thing, but there's hundreds of these kind of stories that kind of make you want to look out for that player. But he certainly has that physicality. Who else do you like, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up on Bowles, because there will be teams, Neil, that will put a lot of weight in that, and they'll be a little bit leery to pull the trigger on a kid, especially for a first rounder, because, you know, again, there's a lot of factors. So that great point. I like the Lamp kid from Western Kentucky.
Yeah, Forrest Lamp.
You look at his tape, right, and the first thing I think about is, okay, he's Western Kentucky, he's a Sun Belt Conference kid, he hasn't faced elite pass rushers. Then you put on his tape against Alabama, where he's facing elite pass rushers, and he plays his butt off. So I think this kid has that ability that you're looking for. I think he may end up being a guard, not a tackle. But, again, he played left tackle. I think he could play tackle in the NFL, but I think he's probably a more natural guard.
Yep.
But, again, I like him. I like him a lot. The other kid I watched play live. And he is like cut from a mold of them. out of this school is the Ryan Ramczyk kid from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I went to the Wisconsin-Purdue game at the end of the year last year. And it looked like, and I shouldn't say this because Joe Thomas has been, in my mind, Joe Thomas would be a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, but he reminded me of what Joe Thomas was like playing tackle at Wisconsin.
Right.
He was nasty. He was huge. He was physical. He could run block. Now, his issue is going to be, can he transition to be a good enough pass blocker in the NFL when he's going to do that, you know, 50% of his snaps as opposed to 20% of his snaps at Wisconsin, because they were a power football team.
One last question for you then, Jeff. You've gone through some of the offensive linemen there, but you haven't named the winner of the Outland Trophy, which is given to the nation's best offensive lineman in 2016 from Alabama, and he tops a lot of the lists I'm looking at in front of me here. Cam Robinson. What are your thoughts on Cam Robinson, who started 44 games at left tackle, but what was he, got arrested in 2016 for marijuana possession, didn't he, which was obviously a red flag?
Well, yeah, you know, that's a concern, and I think everybody after the Laramie Tunsil thing last year at the draft is even more concerned about those types of things. I mean, do you remember how phenomenal was that for us to sit there and watch that happen? Unfold in front of us.
But Jeff, actually, now this is where it's funny. This is where it's funny in terms of, you know, how you need to give the draft time to breathe and to play out, because I was shaking my head. I was like, I can't believe the Dolphins have done that. All of this negative stuff that's around the kid. He's just put together a flawless first season in Miami. No trouble off the field. And what great value that pick has turned out to be for the Dolphins. And now they're going to move him to left tackle this year.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying it's not an exact science. And there's so many factors, because some teams will weigh that real heavy. Other teams will say, nah, what's more important to me is what he put on tape at Alabama, the fact he was able to start 40-some games against, you know, at the elite, one of the elite programs in America, yada, 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 all of it, right? But it's all part of the equation. That, again, is one of the reasons why I think the draft in a lot of ways is more exciting and creates more conversation than maybe anything else the NFL does.
Jeff, I've got one question I want to ask you from the mailbag, and then we'll finish off this week, because I think it kind of relates to the NFL draft, but also to the draft rooms that you sit in with the CFL every year. This comes from Ben White. It's a good question. He says, how often do boards change at this late stage? Are teams locked in yet? Or is debate still ongoing until next Thursday?
It's an awesome question. That's an awesome question, because I was listening to Charlie Casserly the other day, and he was talking about, they were talking about, you know, the last stages of this process, right? And, you know, now it's almost like you don't want any more information. I don't, you know, because you've been inundated. You know everything about these guys,
right?
Or you think you do, right? You've measured them, you've height and weighted them, you've worked them out, you've taken them to dinner, you've talked to their family, all of it, right? I mean, it's an exhaustive, incredibly exhaustive process. Most teams now in this last week will have mock drafts of their own. So the personnel guys or the coaches or however, whoever they choose to be a part of it, will actually take a team and draft as that team so that they can get a feel for the way the way the thing falls down. I know we do that. Right, so one of us will take a team in the league, knowing their needs, knowing da da da, and then we just see how it. It's like playing a board game,
right?
And you play that game numerous times until the. So what you're trying to do is, it's scenarios. You're always trying to work through the scenarios. Well, what if Cleveland doesn't take Garrett first and they take Trubisky? I'm just throwing names, right?
Right.
Well, that now changes. Now the whole draft's turned upside down, right? So you've got to be ready for that moment. And so by going through these war games, if you want to call them, as opposed to board games, I guess war games is a better thing, where it's all scenarios. You're playing it out so that when the moment comes and you're on that clock, you're able to make the best decision you can make for your team.
So really they're debating all the way through, because if they want a certain player and he's gone, then you've got to discuss the next two or three options. So even if they have a board set, Jeff, there has to be flexibility, right?
Yeah, and then there's the constant jockeying that goes on. Like, for example, the coaches may like a guy better than the personnel guys do. Mm. So they're going to do what? They're going to try and make a case for the guy that they want. And there's a natural, Neil, and I think this is really fascinating. There's a natural division between personnel and coaching in most organizations.
Wow.
Right? Because, you know, personnel wants to pick them, but so do the coaches, right? And the coaches, a lot of coaches use the Bill Parcells theory that, you know, if you're going to evaluate me on the meal I cook, then I'm shopping for the groceries.
Right. So that, right? Division's always there, well, Jeff, but the good ones have the least amount of division, right? Or the smallest division.
That's what's so cool about the Patriots, right?
Right.
There's not, you don't hear that. I'm sure they have their discussions, but there's one vision of what they want, right?
Yeah.
And see, I think that's, I agree with you 1,000%, Neil. The really good organizations, they're all in it together.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. Listen, we are out of time, but I can promise you next week we are going to talk defense. How about that?
Well, then let's make it an hour and a half show, damn it.
Hour and a half? You're cutting it back? All right. This has been this has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. Good to have you back, Jeff. Until next week, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.